podcasting from the mega city metropolis of Toronto. You are listening to the Cave of Solitude. I am your host, Eric Anthony. This is your pop culture and comic book podcast, but you are not here to listen to me. You have visited the cave this week to be entertained by the amazing, the unshakable, the one and only Mrs. Daph J. Round of applause for Daph J, everybody. Speak to your people, Daph J.
Back with a vengeance. Just like that sunshine.
The weather report time.
It's about that time again.
Tell us the weather report, Daph J.
Well, birds are chirping. Sun is burning.
Sun is burning.
I'm sweating between my chests a little bit. That's where I sweat. I don't sweat on the brow. I don't sweat on the brow. It's always like underneath, like even when I go to the gym, mm-hmm. There's no evidence that I'm breaking a sweat. I might get a little, you know,
pink rosy around the cheeks,
but other than that, I don't sweat. And I wish I did, so you guys can, you know, so I can have that, like, motivational look at what I'm doing kind of thing. It just, you know, I only ever see it if my shirt presses up against the machine, and then, like, my stomach leaves, like, a smear layer of, like...
That is so gross. I asked for the weather, you gave me your gym report, and your sweat stains.
That's what happens. What I'm saying is I'm jealous of those people that can sweat. Not involuntarily, it's just, but like when they sweat, like they were vigorously doing something,
right.
It shows, you know?
Do you see for those listening, perhaps for the first time, do you see this is all about, Daph J? If I could go back in time and I had the opportunity, I wouldn't start a podcast. I would encourage you to no end to become a stand-up comedian or something, because you are highly entertaining.
This is not a bit. This is just...
I know it's not a bit. That's the point.
I don't think I would be a good comedian, though, because I'm just...
No, I wouldn't want you to write a script. I just put you on the stage and say...
And just start talking.
Tell them about the weather. Tell them how you sweat. Tell them about critters. Whatever it might be.
I don't know about that. I don't think I would be... successful.
Well, I've been told that people don't listen to this show for me. They listen to it for you. And I would have to agree with them.
Oh, come on.
I would have to agree with them. I would. Daph J, let's get into the meat and potatoes this week. We are going to discuss the latest...
Potatoes?
Meat and potatoes. Meat and potatoes. We are going to discuss the latest... addition to the Marvel Cinematic Universe that just hit theaters this weekend.
Yay!
The Amazing Spider-Man.
Amazing!
But it's not called The Amazing Spider-Man. Don't confuse it with the previous iteration of the franchise. This is Spider-Man Homecoming.
Sony. Marvel Studios.
There you go. On cue. Hit me. Boom. Couldn't see it. What? You didn't do the... Is there anything, before we get into discussing the main topic this week and reviewing the film, is there anything that you would like to discuss?
I hate children.
This relates to your movie-going experience.
Yes.
Yes. This is your soapbox.
There's just too many out there. I think we need to stop with the overpopulation. The overpopulating. It's not necessary anymore. There's enough of us out there. And
just put a kibosh on the family
humanity,
making.
Humanity needs to take a break. I'm just saying.
No more happy families.
But nowadays, I don't think any of these families are happy. With all these little monsters walking around, I don't think they're not. And if they were, they wouldn't be sending their kids to the theater all by themselves, because clearly these parents don't want to be with their children. They just send them off so someone else can deal with them. And I've had enough. I'm done with it. I'm saying it out loud. The thing that nobody wants to say... No one likes these little things. Not a fan. I'm not... Why am I babysitting your child? Why are they sitting in front of me? Why are they here without your supervision? Keep your child close to you. Put a leash on it or something. Get it away from me. I'm done.
Well...
I have to
second your soapbox tirade right now, because... I don't mind kids, but when you're in a movie theater and there's a bunch of kids running across the aisle to whisper secrets in each other's ears during the movie, it makes absolutely no sense to me. See, I was a kid. I used to like going to the movies, but I went to the movies, and even if I was with one of my cousins and they would like to whisper in my ear, I'd be like, we're not not supposed to talk in the theater. We gotta watch the movie. Yeah, that's the whole point.
I don't remember. Maybe they did back in the day, but I don't remember previews having to remind you to be considerate and polite to your neighbors. Where, you know, don't be that Susie talker or that
Tommy Texter
or you know, that Kim kicker or none of that. Or like, oh, shut off your phone. Well, okay, I guess now because we all have phones. But like, you know, the common courtesy reminder. Why do we have to get to this point where we have to tell each other to be polite? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And it's just such a shame. And that's what I'm saying. It's not like we're getting any better. Stop making us. We're done. We're not getting any better. We're just getting worse. Can we just take a break? Because I've had it.
You're done. You'd rather be with your dog.
You know what? And I've said this to you before. And I don't know what happened. But, like, I think going forward, I'm just going to do VIP. Like, no kids, alcohol. I think I have to do it. You reserve your seats. I don't think I have the patience for it anymore. You know what I mean? Why are you looking at me like that? You don't feel this? Nobody else feels like this? You're lying if you say you don't.
I said I second your tirade.
You're just looking at me.
You're inspired right now. The inspiration coming from the depths of your dark heart.
This is not an anti-kid show. I'm not trying to hate on children. Like, I'm just saying.
We try to keep the show kid-friendly. We talk about Spider-Man and superheroes. And all the kids now are like, oh, wow, she hates us. We lost our target audience.
No. I like well-behaved people. Not just kids. People. Considerate, genuine, just nice people. And polite, who's nice?
Who's nice?
You know who's nice?
Tell me who's nice.
That Martin Slam Duncan from that Fastball Special show. That guy is nice.
Why?
Yeah, that guy's a gem.
Why is he a gem?
He made my childhood dreams come true.
How so? Do digress, Staff J. Tell me about it. We were talking about Spider-Man Homecoming and Batman still finds his way into the conversation.
So, I got a present.
You're twirling your finger.
And, okay, we got a present. However, my name is first.
I bet that was on purpose. You know, Martin Slam Duncan is trying to bribe you to come on his show, right?
Look, okay. I know you guys can't see it. Okay. But, like, in my hand. Okay. So, like, in my hand, I'm holding this picture.
It's on our Instagram feed for you all to see it. I see it. Yes. Okay. Your name is first, yes.
So, I got this picture. And it's of Batman from the animated series. Okay. And it's signed! It's signed for Batman himself! Okay, this is what it says. It says, to Daphne. And guys, he spelled it right. There's no F, there's no Y. It's a D-A-P-H-N-E.
How would you have felt if he said, to Lady J?
You know what? This is better. This is my true form. This is me.
This is your secret identity.
This is my soul.
Yeah, right.
And Eric. To Daphne and Eric.
Uh-huh.
And then it says,
I'm just a side note.
You're Batman. You're Batman. With an exclamation mark. And then underneath it, it says, Kevin Conroy. Mm-hmm. Like, we're friends or something. We're on a first name basis. Oh, my God. First name basis. He knows who I am. I know who he is. It's just... Oh, my occipital bone is, like, throbbing right now.
I don't even know what that means.
It's the bone behind your head. It's right here, underneath, just above the neck. It's nothing... It's PG, everybody. The occipital bone is just... Kicking me.
And you say that you don't think you could get on stand-up. Just if you went up there with this picture and told them the story, they would all be dying of laughter.
Guys, it was Martin Slam Duncan. I just want to say from the bottom of my
dark heart.
Of this dark, twisted heart, I'm so thankful. Thank you so much. That was such a generous extension of... thank you.
You're
so
speechless.
Much. That's great. I didn't even know what to say.
Yes,
it's true. I was like, dumbfounded when I first saw it. And I'm like, huh? But what do you mean? Like, I did that, like, whole, like, you know, puppy look. Like, when they look sideways.
Yeah,
like,
and then, yeah, all of the night that I showed you the gift for Mr. Slam, you were watching your television show. And then throughout the show, you'd be like, that's amazing. But he spelled my name right. Batman knows my name. But how did he do that? How did he get that done? I'm like, he went to Montreal Comic Con and he went up to Kevin Conroy and this is what he asked him to do. But he spelled my name right. Batman knows how to spell my name. It was just tripping you out the whole night.
This was happening like in intervals of like 5-10 minutes. Yes. Like, where I'd be like, okay, I'm gonna watch TV now, and then all of a sudden it was like,
yeah,
this actually happened to you.
Yeah.
That, yeah. It was great. This is great. Thank you so much.
And that's the show for this week, guys. Thank you, Martha Duncan.
It's fantastic.
Would you go to Montreal Comic Con next time it returns in the summer? If you have close access to people like that? Because the Fan Expo is third biggest in North America. And if you don't like big crowds, like as you've expressed before, it's completely understandable why you wouldn't want to be stuck in a place like that. But you were okay with Niagara Falls Comic Con.
I was okay at Niagara. It was a little like shoulder rubbing, but I mean, reasonably enough. It wasn't like the big, big one that we've gone to at Toronto where I can't breathe. Like, it's just, it's a lot. And then you got like cosplay people, right? So you got these people that are already taking up space plus all their gear. Don't get mistaken what I'm saying, right? I admire their
commitment. Like the spectacle. Yeah.
I really do, right? Yeah. And especially for myself, because I love taking pictures, and that's a great place to do it.
Right.
But it is a lot, and you're waiting in line, and it's just a lot of happening.
Right.
And I don't think the convention center people are always, like, the most helpful. Like, they're just, like, stand there, line up there, go around. It's like, but it's right here, go around. Like, you know what I mean? Yeah. It's just very, yeah, but if it's not as crazy, I would give it a shot. Yeah, sure.
Cool.
Hit the con and then some poutine after. Why not?
There you go. And you might see Kevin Conroy.
Oh my God.
You can go right up to him and say, I'm Daphne. He might say he's Batman, but you can say, I'm Daphne.
Oh my goodness. I'm seeing it all happen.
He tried to get a bumper for us. What would you have done if it was up to me? I would say, okay, Mr. Conroy, I don't want you to say this is Kevin Conroy. I would say, can you just, this is Batman, and you're listening to the Cave of Salt. You got a tear coming. Don't cry. Don't get emotional. Let's get into this week's discussion, shall we?
Let's.
Sounds good. Okay. Before we get into the movie, I want to ask you a question. This isn't a test. I'm trying to put you on the spot. But I've always felt, because I'm a huge Spider-Man fan, as I grow older, he's slowly becoming my favorite character in all of comic books, but definitely my favorite Marvel comic book character. And when I read Spider-Man, as certain stories, not all of them, but certain stories, I feel like you would like Spider-Man. What's your thoughts on the character?
So, personally, a coworker of mine was saying to me, should I go see this movie? And then I'm like, what do I tell them, right? And I found myself saying, you know what I like about Spider-Man? What I like about him is that I think he's the most relatable, depending on what stage of life they're writing him as. If he's a teenager, there is that aspect of, okay, he wants to, like, stop this robbery at, like, this little bodega, but then he needs to get home and do his homework, mm-hmm. right? So it's relatable to within that age bracket. If he's, like, Peter Parker, where he's in college, same kind of scenario. He's trying to juggle a romantic relationship with this person, but can't really be truthfully honest with them, and, like, he has, like, a like three part-time jobs or whatever, right? Plus going to school. Or when he's married, like, there's that aspect. There's, like, that they would, you know, that honesty, that unfiltered everything I give you, but because I want to keep you safe. There's this, like, there's a dilemma. Mm-hmm. He has everyday dilemmas to deal with that I think we can all, what's the word I'm looking for?
Relate
to.
Right.
And I think that's what kind of, that's what I like about him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's one of the reasons why, like, I love certain characters I admire or I love because, one, like, I think of Superman, and that's who you, kind of like a father figure, you wish that was your dad, or that's who you want to grow up to be, somebody like that. Yeah,
it's someone who you wish you had in your life, or had a certain aspect of that relationship with with someone, or you envision someone in your life playing that role, but it's never really yourself. It's always an extension of you.
Yeah.
As opposed to with Peter, it's very much, this is me.
Right.
I'm going through this.
Exactly. Yeah. And as you, depending on when you start reading it or what portions of the catalog of Spider-Man you read, you'll find a version of, like you said, whether it's a high school, whether it's college, whether it's him married, whatever that, whether it's him as a father, because there's versions of that too, where I've always said he's the most relatable kid that I can relate to. Mm. Like, I see myself, I feel like I am Peter Parker in a lot of ways, even though I'm not a photographer, but that's me. All those emotional things he deals with as well, like, I really, really relate to them, and I think that's part of why people have an attachment to him so strongly. Mm-hmm. It's like people either feel really, really strongly about a character like Batman because they feel like we could do that. Mm-hmm. And I feel the pain and the darkness and you know, that feeling of vengeance. But then other people feel really, really, really strongly about Spider-Man on the flip side. Mm. I feel like those two kind of can be compared from company to company. Not that they're a similar character, but the attachment that people get to them.
Right.
So you've never really been attracted to reading Spider-Man books. Is there any particular reason? Like, is there something about Spider-Man that turns you off from the character? Because I feel you like know you what would
it,
like
I
him,
think it is.
But it puzzles me.
I think I could be wrong because you're right. I haven't read much.
Mm-hmm.
I associate Spider-Man being very wordy.
Okay.
And I'm perhaps there's different stories or what are they called? When there's like series or of them where it's not like that. Mm. I really enjoy Spider-Man Blue.
Mm-hmm.
But I find it to be a lot of dialogue. And I guess it's because he's so mouthy. Like, he tries to, like, do this whole, like,
he's while he's fighting, himself,
he's talking. Yeah. Or he's talking to himself. Or there's this monologue all the time. So there's never, like, a moment of, like, observation or clarity or let me just take a minute. Like, Batman, there's that detective mode where just he's looking at something. Mm-hmm. And I can take a break. You know what I mean? But it's also, it's still, it's a... he's still, like, for Batman, for me, he's still saying stuff without having to say it, without having to...
It's more observational.
That's what I think, right?
Batman's got a bit more of a cerebral internalization, and when he talks, it's to Alfred or something, or someone's telling Batman, like, this is how you feel, and you're just not... But Spider-Man's always, like,
he's always
worried.
His mind
is moving, yeah.
And, Not that I don't do that. I'm talking to myself all the time with all the friends in my head. But for it to be on paper, like bubble, 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 I'm just like, this is... It's a little overwhelming for a non-reader.
Yeah.
Like myself.
I get you. That makes sense. I always felt... I remember when I would read Ultimate Spider-Man, and I was like, Daphne would really like... Ultimate Spider-Man, because it was more of a modern day take on the character, and it was wordy, but it was fast paced, and it was very every comic book is serialized, but this really felt like a television show. Like, you just wanted to keep reading episodes.
Hmm.
Like, it was like a binge worthy book that was taking place in you know, the 2000s, the aughts, as they say, right? So, But then when I remember I gave it to you, like, there's too much words. Like, this is, and it was, in the beginning especially, it was very verbose. Like, every, like, so much dialogue that Brian Michael Bendis was putting in it. But then I think of, it would be hard, I think, unless a person is willing to try some of the older Spider-Man stuff to get a bit of context, it would be hard to get somebody who's like, okay, give me Spider-Man. Where do I start? Because there's really good stuff from the 80s. From every decade, there's good stuff. But then it hits points where it's like they were doing so many books of Spider-Man monthly that it became like a saturation. And there was this big thing in the 90s where the stories kind of, and the editorial just got crazy. It's called the Clone Saga, where 4 or 5 different Spider-Man books and all these things happen, and then they just took it all back because they made a mess of everything. So it's like, what's the jumping on point? That's why I thought Ultimate Spider-Man would be good. So if you like some of the things that you saw in this movie, or even through the Andrew Garfield version of Spider-Man, there's a lot of elements there that are Ultimate Spider-Man, like the good stuff. So I don't know. Would you give Spider-Man books a chance?
It's funny. I've always... I want to say yes. I really do. I feel, though, I have a more of a understanding or more of a cinematic on, like, screen Spider-Man. That's all I've ever known. Right. I remember the Spider-Man cartoon.
Right.
I know the Spider-Man's what's his name again?
Tobey Maguire.
The Tobey and the Garfield, and now this guy, the Tom Holland.
Mm-hmm.
So I've only ever really known screen Spider-Man.
Right. And I feel, and I could be wrong, that is kind of the wall that you hit because of it. Because you always...
Because the reading is being done for me. Like, it just, you know, it sounds lazy.
No,
I know
no,
it does.
A lot of people feel that way.
And it sounds cheap, like...
But I feel like there's certain things that you like about the character, but then when the movies have gone bad, it leaves a bad taste in your mouth.
Yes, this is true.
So why would you want to pick up the book?
Well...
Right? I don't know. Am I wrong?
Yes and no.
Okay.
Because I also know that they've... the portrayal of what you get on screen isn't necessarily from the source.
Mm-hmm.
The source is normally a whole lot better, right? And the only reason it's on screen is because there was something good to begin with.
Mm-hmm.
I would like to give it a try. It's just the words intimidate me. Like, I, like, you know, and I...
That's so funny.
They
words really, intimidate
they
me.
They do.
But you read well.
I like comic books because they're picture books. But when I see a lot going on, it's kind of like, where do I go next? You know what I mean? Where am I looking? And it's just... And sometimes I find when they're that wordy and I am really trying to give it a chance, I don't even look at the pictures anymore.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's true.
That's just me, though. I don't know how other people do that. I like to give it a chance. I really would. And I think if you were to recommend a good one, give it a shot.
Mm-hmm.
But what you do tell me about him, or the little that I have read of Spider-Man, I do enjoy it.
Yeah.
Like, I haven't been let down.
Yeah, when I describe things to you that I've read, or the character or stories, like, you get pretty engaged in and interested in what I'm telling you.
Yeah, because someone else is doing it for me.
That's funny. Yeah, I get you.
Either that or you're just a good storyteller. But, I mean, it's just, I don't know.
Yeah, I could definitely recommend stuff that you would find worthwhile reading. That wouldn't be too difficult. And you'd get right into the...
A grade 2 reading level.
No. But what you're saying, though, I understand. Because even stuff that I like... I recently read... In preparation for the interview with Jerry Conway, I read his original Spider-Man stuff. It took me a long time to get through that because it was so, especially back then, it was so wordy, right? And even the original Stan Lee and Steve Ditko comics, Stan Lee did a lot of exposition, like a lot of word balloons and dialogue. And that was kind of his thing, but sometimes you're like, okay, we're getting, there's too much in comparison to what you're used to today in comics that you can finish six issues within an hour. I could read six issues of those. It's almost like reading a novel, it feels like.
Right.
But in a way, it's almost better because it's like, wow, these kids back then who got these books were really getting their money's worth for this.
Oh, okay.
Right? Yeah. Like they didn't just sit, they were in the back seat of a car and they could read that comic book on a road trip, mm-hmm. and it would take them a half hour mm-hmm. to finish it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you buy, you spend a dollar, you buy a kid.
It was dense.
Yeah, there right. was a certain density. Now, they've sharpened the way that they do the storytelling, so you get almost all the same amount of information, if not more information, with not quite as much explanation, but I get what you're saying.
You know what? I think it's just a personality thing. I don't like feeling overwhelmed. I don't like being in a crowded room.
Yeah.
You know, I don't like a lot of words. And you know what? As great as he is, and I know you're a big fan of the George Perez, just even the whole, like a lot of drawing, like a lot of people on one page, it's kind of like, what am I looking at? It's too much
nice
for
pull,
me.
Nice pull, by the way. I like that you knew the guy. That was awesome.
But, that, yeah, man, yeah, thanks. but yeah, like I think there's some people that just like to like just
yeah
clear focus. Okay, this is what we're doing. Very structured. I think maybe that's how I am,
mm-hmm.
where things are a little bit like clean lines and just this is what we're doing. This is who's talking. This is the next step. This yeah. is where we're going, as opposed to the everywhere.
Right, right.
I don't know. I get that's adventure, but I think sometimes. And even, I guess even depending on the mood, right? Like, even though you can do the wordy thing, at some point you're like, all right, this is, I'm tired. And right. Let me just look at the pictures.
You were reading the Spider-Man Deadpool series for a little bit. And I would hear you laugh.
Did I finish
loud.
It?
I'm not sure. I don't think so.
I had to have finished it. Who stops in the middle of a thing?
You do.
No. Okay, I didn't finish The Faith.
No, you didn't finish The Faith.
That one I didn't finish. Oh my God. But I think I did finish the Deadpool in the, yeah. Yeah, I did.
Yeah?
This was months ago.
Did you like it?
Yeah, it was good.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was good.
It was good.
It's funny.
Yeah.
I don't know how old Peter's supposed to be in. No, he was a CEO, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
He's adult.
Because between the two of them, it seemed like Peter was the adult.
Mature one.
Yeah, the mature, you know, the other one was just a goofball. Yeah, I remember. It was good.
Okay.
Yeah, I liked it.
I'll try to find things more of that in that nature for you. All right. So we might get you back on the Spider-Man comic book reading bandwagon, right? Maybe.
Yeah, maybe.
We'll give it a shot. Let's get into this Spider-Man Homecoming movie. This thing, going into it, what were your expectations with the trailers you saw, with the previous, maybe, what the other movies maybe have left the taste in your mouth? Like, what was your impression going in?
My impression going in was, been there, done that, hope to see something different.
Fair. Mine too. Mine was the exact same thing. Hope it's good.
Mm.
And do we really need this?
Huh.
And I'm only saying that, like, I love Spider-Man and I want his movie to be the best movie. Like, I want it to be the best superhero movie. The way I felt about Superman, Batman. But I've had five Spider-Man movies, a couple of them that I really enjoyed, and then a few of them where I just was like, I left the theater and I slapped my forehead, wondering like, why? What did they do? And I knew as soon as I left The Amazing Spider-Man 2, people were like, so, what did you think? And I was like, that was horrible. I was like, the franchise is done. I said that. Not knowing, like, I was just kind of being a jerk because I was upset with what they tried to do. Mm. And I'm like, the franchise is done. So when he came into Civil War, I was like, wow, this is what it could be. It's exciting. So did that have any effect on your anticipation, knowing that it would be in the Marvel Cinematic Universe where the Avengers existed, where Spider-Man should be?
I got excited when he showed up.
Mm-hmm.
Excited? Maybe I'm getting a little bit excited. I was pleasantly surprised.
Right.
That he kind of showed up. Yeah.
Yeah.
It was a nice little plot twist. You know?
Yeah. It was the highlight for me in Civil War. I feel. Like, that's the part that I'll always remember. Like, remember when Spider-Man showed up?
And I think that was one of the funniest scenes, right? Mm-hmm. The Avengers are fighting, so that's a memorable scene in itself. But he took... I found that him coming and playing the role that he did, it kind of lightened the heaviness behind what was going on. You know what I mean? It's like right. friends attacking each other. This yes. isn't. I remember when I first saw the trailer to the Avengers, and when I first saw them going at it at each other, I got emotional. I got a little teary eyed. I remember feeling like this.
Right.
Watching it, and then having Spider-Man kind of like relieve that pressure, mm-hmm. it made it enjoyable to watch, actually. It was kind of like, oh, look at them fighting, as opposed to like, oh no, they're fighting. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It made it fun.
Right.
Yeah.
And that's, I think, what you want to feel when Spider-Man is on the screen. You want to feel that sense of wonderment and fun, like you're in a comic book.
Right.
So, I was hopeful, but I wasn't sure, like... It became one of those things where first the trailers, I felt like they showed everything good that you'd like. There wasn't much from that I thought in watching the trailers. Like, well, what else are they going to show? Like the Staten Island Ferry. Like, that's huge. Why would you show that? Why wouldn't you save that for the movie? The bank robbery was in that. You saw that he was going to be on a plane. Like, there's all these things where it's like, I want to see this, but they're showing me everything. So I was a little disappointed in that, thinking like, oof, I don't know. Last time I saw all of these high points in a movie trailer,
it tanked.
Yeah, I was like, ugh. But when the reviews came in a week early, and it was like in the 90s, 93% on Rotten Tomato, and it was just like, best Spider-Man movie that they've made. Best Marvel movie they've made. I was like, really? This is a pleasant surprise. Did they pay someone off for this? Like, are they really trying to make this movie a sure hit? But then when people were leaving the theaters, I had people texting me during the movie. Martin Slam Duncan texted me during the movie saying how much he was enjoying it. So I was like, wow, this is gonna be special. So let's do a quick synopsis of the storyline, courtesy of IMDb. It says, thrilled by his experience with the Avengers, Peter returns home where he lives with his Aunt May under the watchful eye of his new mentor, Tony Stark. Peter tries to fall back into his normal daily routine, distracted by thoughts of proving himself to be more than just your friendly neighborhood Spider-Man. But when the Vulture emerges as a new villain, everything that Peter holds most important will be threatened. Sounds like a classic Spider-Man story. So, let's get into this finally. How did you feel about this film? What did you think of Tom Holland as Spider-Man returning?
I liked him.
Yeah?
Mm-hmm.
In comparison to the Maguire and the Garfield, is he number one for you?
I liked Garfield.
Yeah?
But I feel like he kind of walked around with a scowl a little
bit. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
This kid kind of like... Meh. He didn't have a scowl, but he wasn't happy-go-lucky. He was just like a regular guy.
And, yeah.
And just enjoyed he enjoyed the good times he had, and when he worried for real, and mm-hmm. when he was tired. Like, it wasn't just a monotone of emotion. He, you know.
Yeah.
Do you know what I'm saying, this thing here?
Yeah, he had range in how yes. he was feeling. It wasn't too forced to be one thing. He wasn't forcing the being too emotional. He wasn't, like, he just seemed very eager, like a puppy. Which, you know, Spider-Man is a young kid. And in those other movies, Tobey Maguire looked like he was 35.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And mm-hmm. it kind of takes you out of it. And then even Andrew Garfield wasn't really a kid. He looked more like a kid in high school. Like, he played the part a little bit more. But I really liked that transition that Garfield gave. He made Spider-Man a little bit more funnier. I liked the relationship with Gwen. Like, all those things I thought were really good, well captured. But there was, when Tom Holland plays him, you realize, like, yeah, that's it. He's got it. Mm. He's got that balance of being happy when he's Spider-Man, and then
excited kind of, even.
Yeah, he's super excited to be Spider-Man, and then kind of that feeling of worried and awkward when he's Peter, but still knows what he's doing within his circle.
Right.
Do you know what? I don't know if that makes any sense, but it had the right tone. Peter Parker has the right tone with Tom Holland.
Hey, you know what I just noticed? And maybe you can correct me if I'm wrong.
Yeah.
He didn't do the typical Peter Parker taking pictures thing, did he?
No, he didn't.
That wasn't in this movie.
It wasn't in it. No. And that's something I wanted to talk about.
Oh.
Yeah.
Is that a thumbs up or a thumbs down?
We'll get to it.
Okay.
We'll get to it. Yeah. So I thought his humor was right as Spider-Man.
Okay.
As Peter, he had that... He was earnest in wanting to do whatever it was he had to do with his friends, but was still insecure, which is right. And I like that they captured high school era Peter Parker really well, as opposed to just, like, acknowledging it the way they did in the other movies. Like, yeah, he's a high school kid. Look, here he is in high school. This one, they lived in that school. You were in his classroom a number of times, and you were getting to know teachers, and he was in detention, and you got to know the student body and house parties. Like, he, you know what I'm saying? Like, you really lived in that thing. It wasn't like he was in high school and the next year he's out of high school. Like, this is a high school story.
Huh.
Do you know what I mean? In the original Spider-Man, it was good that they showed he starts off as a kid being Spider-Man. He gets bitten in high school on a school trip, but, you know, 20 minutes later, he's graduating. Right. We're out of that era. This right. one, they're staying here. He's going to the homecoming dance. That's the, like, you know. So it was kind of that 80s classic teen movie. Like Teen Wolf, where he goes to the dance at the end.
Hmm.
Do you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Which was cool. That tone was there, which it's supposed to be.
See, I didn't feel the high school tone.
No, eh?
No. For me, I found it very middle school-like. And I don't know if that makes any sense whatsoever, or if it's relevant, but I didn't like it.
Hmm. You felt it was too juvenile.
Yes. I feel like, without giving too much of my opinion, I feel like this movie and a lot of parts of it were geared to kids.
Yeah. I agree.
It was just, and I know because it's a high school setting, then it makes sense that the cast is going to generally be, you know, kids.
And we know how you feel about them.
But, yeah, I felt it was quite juvenile. Considering the previous, group he was with. You know what I mean? It was just very extreme
right.
for me.
Yeah.
I don't know. Is that what high school kids are like now? Very like...
That's what
like
we...
Like that?
We were like that in high school when we were 15.
Let right? me tell you something. I was not like that in high school. Not me.
No, not you?
No!
We may not think we were. I don't think anybody realizes they were like that in high school. But we were.
Okay, that's a whole other thing.
That's another
but episode. And I'm not trying to be bad. I really don't think I was like that. It's not about me right now. What I'm trying to say is...
Is there anything particular that you can reference as to, like, how juvenile you felt it was when they were referring to that? Was it just the age that they were portraying?
Even the way some characters played their role, it just seemed very... immature and silly. Normally, I'm guessing, I've been out of there for a while, but when you're in high school, you want to be treated as an adult. You want to be, you know, you want to be, like, in charge. You want to be the one in the room to say something, and it seemed like everybody was just unsure of stuff. I don't know how to say it.
Yeah, I get what you mean.
I do because
I've read so much Spider-Man lately, especially, but I've been reading old Spider-Man, like early, like very early, to the latest stuff. And I'm so used to where Spider-Man is now when I read him, that when I see him again as a 15-year-old kid, it's kind of like, it seems really young. Like, I don't know if I want to see this story again of him being a kid. And, like, and this way being, and almost like you said, very young. To the point where he's, and Tom Holland is the right guy to portray it, because in the previous movies when they're like, oh, he's a kid, and they take off Tobey Maguire's mask, like, oh, he's just a kid. It's like, no, he's like more like Spider-Man, oh, Spider-Old Man, as opposed to Spider-Man. This is more Spider-Boy. Mm-hmm. And in the comics, he was always having to fake the fact that he was a full-grown man, right? He knew, he realized he was just a teenager.
I find a lot of things with this movie, the same things that I liked about it was the same thing I disliked about it.
Okay. Do tell.
Well, that was one of them, right? Okay. I understand and respect the environment. He, of course, he's a teenager, so obviously his life is going to be revolving around people within his age bracket. But it was also the thing that was annoying me. It's like these awkward scenarios of these people interacting with each other. It was just like, shoot me now kind of thing, you know? Mm-hmm. It's like, dude, she's right there. It's like, okay, yeah, I'm right. Hmm. You know? But I don't know. Can't put my finger on it. It was just,
it didn't pull you one way or the other. It made you indifferent. Like, you didn't know if you liked it or if you didn't like it.
Yeah.
You would have rather had it been more
Even the way his... Are we spoiling this?
Spoiling this. You're forewarned. Spoilers.
Like, I guess even the way his friend found out that he was Spider-Man. I mean, I liked it because it's not always like a ta-da. Mm-hmm. Oh my gosh, you're Spider-Man. Like, it's sometimes it's just like, yeah, you walked in on me, mm-hmm. kind of thing, right?
Yeah.
But then when he's like, can I try on your suit? Can I do this with that? Can I do that? Can I tell everyone you're Spider-Man? Obviously not. So stop being stupid about it. You know what I mean? Like, it was kind of like that annoying teenage yap that makes me like twitch a little bit. I found that kind of a dialogue.
Yeah, like, oh, he's annoying teenagers.
Yeah, it's like, but like, I think it's like me. I'm yelling at myself right now. Get the words out. You know, I can't get the words out. But that's what I want to tell these people. Say what you want to say.
But I kind of think, and I agree with your point. It is true that sometimes it was that immaturity. But I think that's kind of the point, right? Is that you are dealing with kids who don't really know how to deal with this thing and are just trying to be accepted from being outcast within their social circle. They are trying to be accepted.
But, well, that's what I'm saying. I like it because it's a very real thing.
Right, but it's also
irritating. As an adult, I'm having a hard time speaking right now.
So you're sitting there like an Aunt May in the theater.
Like,
and you know what? I got to say, for me, when the kids on the screen were being annoying, it was heightened by the kids in the theater who were being extremely annoying. Because we were sitting with those kids, right? I felt like they ruined part of my movie going experience because I just wanted to watch this movie, and I was like, oh my goodness, I'm in the real movie right now, surrounded by ridiculous children.
So on one hand, I appreciated the realism of it, and on the other hand, I just wanted to shake them, like stop it.
There was a couple times where I was in that theater, I was about to pull a Daft J, and
you know how ignorant it got in there? I had to yell in the middle. I had to get ignorant. I told the whole theater to shut up.
Yeah, it was true. True story.
I actually did this. True story. In the middle of the movie.
Facts.
I shouldn't have to do that. No. Anyway, let's not go down that road. It's done. You know what it is? They're out of school right now. They're all over the place. I can't get
it. They gotta get there. They gotta get there.
They're like everywhere. Like, yeah. Anyway, go on.
So this movie featured a new villain, the Vulture, that we didn't see in any of the other ones. Thankfully, there wasn't a Green Goblin revisiting again, because I think we're done trying to tell Green Goblin stories. I thought it was a great introduction to the character, and the way they tied in the whole Marvel Cinematic Universe with, you know, cleaning up the Avengers mess from the first Avengers in New York City with the Chitauri ships and all the technology and having this cleanup crew, and then, you know, Keaton and his team get pushed out because some government agency is now the ones that are going to be taking in all of the debris and the alien tech. So what I liked about Keaton and his portrayal of the Vulture is that in comparison to some other Marvel movies, right away you have an arc with the villain that you become familiar with. You know what his motives are. You know why he's doing what he's doing. He's the hero of his own story, right? You don't look at him immediately and say, this guy's a bad guy. He's a guy who's been dealt a bad hand, and what he's going to do by taking some of that tech with him, or that they drive back to the shop, that they say, hey, we still got that tech left over there. He feels like he's got to take care of his men that have been left out of work. He's got to take care of his family. And when you think about it, later on in the movie, he explains, like, all those other people, what do you think Tony Stark got rich off of? He got rich off of weapons and hurting people with weapons and selling them to other countries. So if I've got to sell high-tech weapons in order to take care of my people, what's the difference, really? Which made sense.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, this is a great villain.
Mm-hmm.
Which I would have to say, out of all of the Marvel movies and television shows on Netflix, I would say Loki, Purple Man, Kingpin, and the Vulture are the best villains established.
Yeah, I like the Vulture.
Yeah.
Too bad he wasn't in it enough.
You didn't feel he was in it enough?
I don't think so.
Okay.
Michael Keaton, maybe? Mm-hmm. But not. I don't think the Vulture was in it enough.
Did you...
That's just my opinion. It could be wrong.
Go ahead. I want to hear your opinion.
I liked him. And I liked when he was the Vulture. I liked the whole, like, ensemble and the toof, yeah. You know, the wings and everything. And I liked how it made it look like BA, you know? The Vulture that I know is what I seen in the comics. Is this bald-headed, like, old, skinny, fragile... bird. But he made it look like, oh, he's mean.
Yeah.
This man's mean.
Yeah.
And I liked that. I liked his portrayal of it. I just wish I got a little bit more.
Want to see more of it. Okay. Yeah.
I saw him on the ground more than I did on flight. And when he was, it was very short.
Okay. You wanted to see him more in action.
And I felt that his transition from blue collar worker to this murderous man boss, I didn't see it happen. I didn't see that becoming of thing.
Okay.
He just, one day he was a construction worker in a bad mood, and the next he's like,
I don't,
he's boss. You know right, what I mean?
Yeah. I don't think you're meant to see him, because I don't think he was necessarily like a gang leader per se. He did.
No, he was a foreman.
He was exactly, and when they changed profession, as it were, right? He wasn't robbing banks. He wasn't in the comics. The Vulture is like a jewel thief, or like the word says, a vulture. He goes and takes what seem to be the scraps of, like, corpses, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, like, the Vulture would come in and fly through a jewelry store and take stuff or rob a bank or something like that. But in this case, it was just selling weapons to people. Do what you want with them. Mm-hmm. This is what these weapons are able to do. Gravity weapons, whatever. I think you see him transition or have to become a certain thing because now this kid, this Spider-Man,
is
cramping my style.
Hmm.
So I'm being forced to act this way. Like, I don't want to be this villain.
Yeah, he was happy to be under the radar for 8 years.
He just wanted to be on the radar.
Right, okay. I see what you're saying.
So when you kind of see him turn into that thing as a more of a, I got to protect what's mine.
Mm-hmm.
Here, this is my family, this is my livelihood, this is my daughter, this is my men. I got to protect what's mine. And people who get in the way of that are okay. Good, right?
I can respect that.
So in that way, I felt it was well established. I liked the crew that he had because some of them were references to other, like, Spider-Man villains who you would... I've always said, why don't they put the Shocker in the movie as, like, a villain he's got to get through? Mm. Or an opening scene where he's fighting the shocker on the street, and he, you know, that's, it's like the James Bond. There's always like that opening montage. Like the way they did, like,
the rhino at the end of the movie?
Yeah.
Of the, which one
was Amazing it? Spider-Man yeah. 2. Yeah, kind of like that, but do it at the beginning, you know, see him take out one of his other villains. So I was happy that they had a cameo, or not a cameo, but a part for the shocker. Mm. Not that he's the main villain, but he's in it.
Mm.
That was cool. I like the action scenes.
You think they were making fun of it?
The shocker?
Yeah.
I think...
Because didn't the Vulture, played by Michael Keaton, say something like, what are you trying to call yourself again? What is it that you're... Like, you know what I mean? Like, do you think... You know how the Lego movie, the Batman Lego movie, kind of made jokes about their villains, like Condiment Man and
yeah.
all that stuff?
Maybe a little bit, but...
I felt watching this movie, I was trying to look for, like, nuggets. Not Lots. Nuggets. Not nuggets. Easter eggs.
Lots. Tons.
Like, the first nugget I was trying to see was the, when Peter Parker opened up his locker, and I think it had, like, 1197 or something. And I'm like, Eric, is
1184.
That, like... 1184. Yeah. Yeah. And I'm like, is that a comic book thing, or is that, like... Yeah,
you do look for stuff like that.
Like, I'm like, does those numbers mean anything?
Might be. I don't know.
Well, anyway.
I associated those numbers with you, actually, when I saw 1184.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
Huh. Hey! I never thought about that.
There you go.
So you were talking about the Vulture.
Yeah, I like the action scenes.
That the shocker.
Oh, the shocker. Yes, if it was a joke, I don't think so. Well, because the spoilers, the guy who first seems to be the shocker, he gets eliminated. He uses the wrong weapon on him to
talk about a stun gun.
Yeah, he thought it was a stun gun. It turned out to be like a disintegrator. The other guy.
But why didn't it disintegrate the actual shocker? Is my question.
Why disintegrate? I don't think he meant to.
No, but why? My question is, why didn't it disintegrate the actual shocker weapon?
Oh, the weapon. Because I think the weapon's of the same tech, right? It's Chitauri.
Yeah, but not everything around it. It's still chunks of metal. The actual diamond itself or whatever it was.
It's a great question. I don't know. I didn't even think of that.
Anyway.
The guy who was making all of his... weapons.
Is that a guy? Is that a real guy?
Yeah, he's the Tinkerer. Oh. He's another Spider-Man villain. So they had all of these cool little nods to people. Even Donald Glover.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, that I caught.
Yes.
That was an easy find.
That was... Donald Glover, when Spider-Man goes through the tech of the suit and he puts the background check on Donald Glover's character, Aaron Davis, it shows, like, a street name, The Prowler. The Prowler is another character, originally a villain in Spider-Man comics, but he's now an ally to Spider-Man.
Huh.
So they threw that in there. But Aaron Davis is a big Easter egg because he says to Spider-Man, he goes, you know, my nephew lives in this area,
mm-hmm.
and I don't want... Miles Morales, right.
What?
Yeah, good pull.
Oh my God.
I didn't even know you knew who Miles Morales was. Good
Whoa.
For you. Yeah.
Look at me go.
Yeah, so that was Miles Morales, who is the Ultimate Spider-Man, who is now, he's a really cool character because he is a black and Puerto Rican, black Hispanic.
Puerto Rico.
So he might show up in some Spider-Man films in the future, which would be really cool. So those were some cool Easter eggs in there. What else was an Easter egg? Matt Gargan, the Shocker. Not the Shocker, the Scorpion. And the end credits. There's two end credits at the end of this movie. And he's mentioned during the movie where... You see him have the Scorpion tattoo. He's another Spider-Man villain, the Scorpion.
Hmm.
So all of these...
But that was end credit, not in the movie.
He did show up a little bit in the movie.
What?
Yeah.
What?
They mention him.
Oh, they mention him.
They either mention him or you see him, but that was in there too. And then, do you remember the there's an Asian girl on that... team that they have that traveled to Washington that did the I don't know what it's called.
The decathlon? Not a decathlon.
Yeah. What?
It's like a high, like, yeah. Okay.
The gifted kid team. I forget what they're called.
Yeah.
Her name was Cindy. Cindy Moon in the recent Spider-Man comics was a girl who was bitten by the same spider that Peter Parker was bitten from. And she also established spider powers. She's known as Silk.
Okay.
So that's another Spider-Verse character that could potentially show up in a sequel.
Do you like that they're taking or have taken these characters from different verses and putting them, like, mishmashing them into one?
Yes, because now they all are in the same one in the comic books. They all exist in the same one.
Okay, well, you would know this.
Yeah. So that's kind of, those are all cool little things that they did, and they, you know, they expanded Spider-Man's world with other characters that are now beloved characters. Like, Betty Brant was in there as well. She wasn't working for the Daily Bugle, but she was in the high school. And Ned is also, I think, based off of a character who is best friends in the comic books with Miles Morales. He's in the comics. There's a character very, very similar to Ned named Genki, who is Miles Morales' best friend. So I feel like they kind of borrowed that and integrated it together. So there was a lot of stuff that they paid homage to and you know, tried to do it justice and throw lots of, plenty of Easter eggs in there, which was very satisfying for the Spider-Man fans in the know. And even if you didn't, they were charming characters.
Right.
How about yourself? Did you catch anything else?
I liked their approach to certain characters in the movie, particularly, like, Liz.
Okay.
What I liked about her is that she was the love interest of Peter, but she was accessible.
Okay.
She wasn't... It was a nice change from the usual, where she's, like, really popular and out of reach. You know what I mean? And he's just kind of, like, just watching her from a distance. I mean, he did that a little bit, but it you know, he could talk to her. Mm-hmm. He was in somewhat of the same circle.
Right, right.
So you could see why it is that he liked her. Not that she was just a pretty face.
Right.
And there was some kind of dialogue between them. I thought that was different.
I like that too.
You know?
Yeah. I like that they didn't make it as though she was totally out of his league and it was an impossibility. Yeah.
Yeah.
I like that too.
I also liked that it was largely based in Queens, which I think it made for very funny, scenes, because there's not that many tall buildings like there would be in Manhattan, where he can, like, web and swing and go here and there. There were times where he would just have to make do with just running, you know,
in the neighborhoods and stuff. Yeah.
I died. Yeah. I think I cackled through that one. Well, finally, when everyone shut up, you can actually hear me laughing. And that was one of those points.
Right.
Where he had to kind of just use his legs and move. And I thought that kind of was, it was able to have him, there was different obstacles that he had to deal with.
Right.
And I like that kind of change.
Yeah, that's true. Even when he was stuck in the damage control vault.
Yeah.
Right? Having to figure out how to get out of there, all that kind of stuff was really cool. How did you feel the action scenes were with Spider-Man? How did you feel that they looked? Did they feel more energetic, more... to CGI, like, what was it like for you?
That I will say, I didn't feel there was any new memorable action scenes. It didn't seem like the fairy scene kind of reminded me of the Spider-Man train scene, where he's trying to keep everything together and web everything together.
Totally. Yeah.
It didn't seem all that fresh.
Yeah, I get it.
It seemed familiar.
Okay.
I'm not hating on it. It just seemed like, okay.
And after 5 movies, you're going to see, and things are going to remind you, like, there's not going to be everything brand new. Like, oh, I've never seen that before.
But I wonder, too, then, does that happen in the comics, too? Do you find a lot of, like, artwork being repetitive with this particular character? Because there's only so many things he can try to web up. You know what I mean?
Yes. There's one particular thing that is extremely revisited in Spider-Man comics, and they did it in this movie.
I know what it is.
Tell me what it is.
Heavy things.
Yes. Yes. Which was an awesome moment. in this movie. I was really happy that they threw that in there the way that they did. I thought it was great.
So what is that supposed to do? To talk, like, demonstrate how strong, like, Bull he is? Or
it's,
what?
It's his... What's interesting about Spider-Man, and I think what the charm about the character that everybody likes, is that he sometimes doesn't have the business to be in situations that he's in and to find a way out. Because he's not as strong as, you know, other characters are. And he can't fly. And he is super powered. And, you know, when you compare the power, the strength of a spider, proportionate strength and all that stuff. But it's his will, right? It's Spider-Man's determination.
Even
his
physicality. Like, even exactly. though he is a little bit strong, he's not like Thor muscle.
Exactly.
He's not bulk.
Right.
He's just... a fit.
Right. Exactly.
Individual.
So the character puts him, he doesn't care what he's up against. There's a story in the comic books called Nothing Can Stop the Juggernaut, which is a Spider-Man story, 2 issues. And the Juggernaut is a unstoppable character. He just runs through everything.
Isn't that a character in the X-Men?
That's right.
Oh, it's okay.
A character in the X-Men. And for some reason...
I'm 2 for 2.
You are. You're really good today. With George Perez. Miles. I was like, whoa, she is reading the books. But anyways, the story is captures the essence of Spider-Man that he can't stop Juggernaut if it was just one-on-one. But he figures out a way to stop him. And he gets his butt kicked, but he figures out a way to do it. And that's the thing of Spider-Man. It's like an analog for life. We find ourselves in situations where we're like, I don't know how I'm going to deal with this problem. But we figure it out. And that's what makes, I think, Spider-Man such a relatable, admirable character. Because we approach life like that.
Where there's a will, there's a way.
And that's the thing with those, that particular scene in this movie near the, at the end when he fights the Vulture and he's buried under all that rubble in a building and he doesn't have the high-tech suit on, he figures out a way to get out of
it. To get it, okay.
Right?
Yeah.
So that's something that is a very, very famous page in...
And you like that.
I love that. Yeah, I love that. Those scenes. I love when they do a throwback to, you know, those key... Spider-Man.
You know what throwback I did like?
What's that?
At the very beginning of the movie.
Yeah.
Where he was doing that revisiting the whole airport Avenger battle.
Right. Instance. That was great.
From his standpoint, a selfie.
Yeah.
I thought that was funny.
And that's very Peter Parker, because he takes selfies of himself as a profession. Right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, so there's lots of things that when I watched this, I was like, scratching my chin, trying to nitpick at all the things. Oh, this is the greatest movie ever. Spider-Man, greatest Marvel. I was like, is it really? But then when I think back to little things that they put there, I'm like, yeah, I see them getting some stuff. Setting...
the tone?
Yeah, laying down the tracks
right.
of where this character is going to be headed.
Hmm.
So... I liked... the other thing, too, I think you mentioned the how local... they made the movie.
Yeah.
Even the big issue, it wasn't a world-ending event. It was he had to stop this one villain from intercepting cargo that belonged to the Avengers and Tony Stark.
Mm-hmm.
That was, and it was just in New York. It was localized. I really like that. That's very Spider-Man.
You were going to say something before about the lack of camera usage.
Yes, is there anything else you want to mention of things that you liked or parts of the movie that you want to get into? Like, when we review these movies, we don't go scene for scene, like, section for section, which is fine, but
the highlights. I like that he would run out of webbing.
Perfect. That's exactly what needs to happen.
I thought that was pretty cool.
Mm-hmm.
And like I said, making that whole, like... his obstacles interesting.
Mm-hmm.
I like that you kind of saw him do it.
Yes.
Right, because he does that, no?
Yes.
What else did I like? The responsibility and dilemma of being a good student and letting Aunt May know where he was. That balance between personal life and hero.
Mm-hmm.
That I liked. What else did I like? I liked that it was kind of like I found this film to be kind of like a character-driven coming of age.
Yes, totally.
Right?
Totally.
Which then had me appreciate his whole, like, mastering his powers.
Yes.
I like that.
Mm-hmm.
But I didn't like that his suit was doing it all for him. You know what I mean? Like, I want to see him on the come up. I don't want to see what his suit can do. Yeah. I want to see what he can do.
Yeah.
Like, intimidating, you know, intimidating setting or, like, you know, stun gun kind of thing. You don't do that. Right? Yes. You're just a good-natured kid who wants to do good when you can. And, like you said, it's that will. You shouldn't be able to do certain things. But you're gonna. Because it's the right thing to do.
Right.
Right? And I didn't like that. I didn't like how fancy his suit was. I appreciate that my, like, I remember seeing it for the first time in the Avengers, and I was kind of like, not a fan.
Mm-hmm. I like how it looks. Like, I like that it looks like the best version aesthetically mm-hmm. of the Spider-Man suits.
Mm-hmm.
But I agree with you 100%. I was a little irritated with what the suit could
do. And, like, Tony Stark is, like, this gift to Spider-Man. That, him being, like, this mentor, I gave you the suit, look how fancy I can make you. Can make you the hero kind of thing.
Just listen to me.
It was just, like, that tone. I didn't like that. I didn't like that.
I'm gonna... Can I give you some of my thumbs down things that bothered me?
Oh, is that what we're going into? Yeah, sure.
Well, because you kind of
started the role.
Yeah, and you were, and you, I agree with everything you've said thus far.
Okay, those you go and then I go.
Sure.
You go and I go.
So a big thing for me, and I'm happy they didn't redo it. I don't need to see Uncle Ben be killed again.
Mm-hmm.
But I need Uncle Ben referenced. He needs to be in the story. He needs to be a part of May's story.
Yeah.
And what it is that Peter does and doesn't do and why he checks in with Aunt May. He's never referenced.
Are you sure?
He's never mentioned. If I'm not mistaken, I could be wrong.
We only seen it once.
I've only seen it once, but I don't feel he had any presence in Peter's life in this movie.
Presence or notability?
Both.
I feel like I disagree. I feel like they may have referenced it once when they were... I think he said it to Ned when he's like, you know, I can't put her through this again. Kind of thing. Where I think Ned had asked, does she know? And he's like, no. And he's like, why doesn't she? And he's like, I can't do this to her. She's already been through enough or something
true,
like that.
True, yes. So right? There's stuff like that, but for me...
And I guess unless you are a person who has that knowledge, you're right. They didn't say anything about Uncle Ben. And unless you are the person that knows about this Uncle Ben, you're like, what is he talking about? Who's Aunt May and why is she sad?
Yeah. Yeah. this is me and my... armchair quarterbacking.
Can you stop giving me that? Give me a minute.
Daphne is talking to Kobayashi. Kobe the dog is sitting here looking at us saying, when will you give me my food?
Like, I'm getting
my
the
GD
look.
Food. I need to go to bed. That's the look she's giving us.
God, you're burning. Her eyes are burning me behind my head. Jeez. You were saying.
In my armchair quarterbacking, in my perfect world, I would have liked a flashback, not of the death, maybe of the funeral of Uncle Ben, the fact that he was gone, and there is the guilt factor. Peter has to carry guilt with him.
That's what made him do this, right?
Right, right. Because initially when he gets his spider powers, he's got a chip on his shoulder to be like, I'll show everybody now what I can do.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to make money and I'm going to get the girl. Like, those are essential parts of the story of Peter Parker's arc. And his motivation to do good as Spider-Man comes from the responsibility and the power that he has.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, just the pipe dream. Imagine at the wake of Ben Parker, the cameo you give of Stan Lee is at the wake saying, you know, and Ben Parker's famous words were always, with great power comes great responsibility, and that rings in Peter's head through the whole movie. So that when he's buried underneath the rubble and he's thinking of what he has to do, you hear Stan Lee say, you know, Ben Parker's famous words were always, with great power comes great response. Like, that would have made me get out of my chair and kick every kid that was walking around the theater, because that would have been the ultimate moment of any superhero movie ever, for Stan Lee to utter those words in Peter's head. Right? As opposed to Tony Stark saying, you can't do it. You know, just stay home, kid. That pissed me off. Because I don't feel Tony Stark should ever be a motivation to Peter Parker. Especially as a teenager, where he's so devoted and guilt-ridden and like, I have to do this for Aunt May. He gets to a point sometimes in those early years of Spider-Man where he won't even go on a date. Or he'll blow off Gwen and be like, oh my goodness, my poor aunt. I don't know what I'm going to do if my aunt dies. I'm almost to the point where I'm like, I just want this old lady to die. Because his devotion to her is so essential.
Mm.
And I really feel that that needed to be explored a little bit more in this movie of like, this kid really...
Yeah, I felt there was a disconnect between him and Aunt May.
And she's so protective of him to the point that it's overbearing, but he loves her so much to the point that it's like, okay, kid, like, it's not even your real aunt. Like, you got to see that and feel that. And when in the comics where he's lifting that thing over his head, he's got a face of Ben and a face of Aunt May. He's like, do it for them, do it for this. Like, those are the words coming out of his mouth, and that's what motivates him.
Mm.
So when I heard Tony's voice, I was like, ugh.
Yeah, it was wrong.
It ruined it for it's because it's so key.
Mm.
That's the reason why, because it's so key.
Yeah.
So, and I didn't like the tech.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't like that his suit wasn't designed by him. I understood the Karen that he was talking to, because Spider-Man always talks to himself, so it gave him a reason to be talking to somebody.
Okay.
Right. I understood and appreciated that. I'm like, oh, they got him to talk to himself a lot during the movie, and somebody was talking back to him and, you know, giving him feedback, like, kiss her.
Right.
Or all that, oh, he likes you, like, all that kind of stuff.
Okay, yeah.
So that was kind of cool.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I didn't like that it was designed and held over his head by Tony. It's like, give me the suit. My suit. Like, Spider-Man's
always... Yeah, he was a little bit like a tyrannical... You know, you have this because of me, and I'll take it away because you're not behaving. I don't know. There's something about it.
Yeah.
And for him to be, like, the hero in Spider-Man's movie, I didn't like that too much either. I mean, I've already had a gripe about Tony being the mentor in this whole thing, so I'm going to look for reasons to be upset about him showing up.
Yeah.
That's my gripe.
I feel like he's... been positioned too much of the Batman of this universe, and I'm kind of like, okay, I get it. Tony Stark, Iron Man was the movie that got this all started. He's the link, gets people to go to the theater because they realize it's all connected, and he was in Civil War, and he's in Spider. Like, I get it.
Mm-hmm.
Robert Downey Jr. is the man.
Mm-hmm.
He's a great actor, and he plays a great Tony Stark. But I just wanted my Spider-Man.
Do you think because the whole Spider-Man character was forced to be introduced later on because of this whole thing, that they were kind of forced to do it this way?
Yeah, I do. And in a way, it works, because there is a era in the Spider-Man books where Tony Stark does take him on, Peter and his aunt and MJ. He says, come move into Avengers Mansion, live with me. And he's kind of Peter's boss. During that Civil War story.
Mm-hmm, I remember. Right?
So he kind of was his little puppy for a little bit. but it felt really good when he punches Tony in the face.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
But so that part of it was, it was true to the characters. Like, there has been that relationship at some point. So it wasn't completely off. But at this stage of his life, I really wanted to hear Ben Parker's voice in his head being the driving force and motivation.
Excuse me.
I need the power responsibility line. You okay?
You need it? Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm good. I'm good.
Cool. So those were my biggest gripes. The suit, I want Peter to make the suit and for it to malfunction on him. I want the power responsibility factor. I need a little bit more of the Parker family. Not his parents, like in Amazing Spider-Man 2. That was too much. But I need his relationship with Aunt May to be... I think, and I know this sounds crazy, I think the best all-around version that I've seen is Spider-Man 2 with Doc Ock. And that train scene, what I don't think we're ever going to find a better moment ever than that. Like, that was it. He got it right there. Sam Raimi got it for me. So, yeah, anything else for you that you want to mention?
Okay, how do I say this? I have a couple of things I want to say. I just need to know how to say them right.
Okay.
One is Michelle is her name.
Yeah.
And it turns out to be MJ.
Yeah.
I'm cool with doing things differently.
Yeah.
But I feel like there has to be some type of authenticity. Like, there has to be some kind of build from a familiar foundation.
Okay.
Again, there's a lot of things in this movie that I liked, but they're the same things that I don't like. I like that she wasn't, you know, all that popular. All right, she didn't have red hair. I'm good with the change, right? What I didn't understand is that isn't MJ, like, the sweet girl? You know, she's likable. Maybe she didn't have to be popular, but she was, like, you know, nice. This one here was throwing up the middle finger. She was bitter. She had no friends. She was, like, this, you know, judgmental loner that kept popping up, like, out of nowhere, you know, making these sly comments where it added comedy a little bit, but it was just kind of, like, I liked her character up until she said, I'm MJ.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, oh, that's not at all what I was envisioning.
It could be that they called her MJ, not because she's going to be Mary Jane, but just that...
But where do you think my mind is going to go to?
Absolutely. Everyone's mind goes there. And I think when they were asking the producers of the film, like, so she's, like, Michelle, she's MJ. They're like, ah, you know what? We thought her name is Michelle. That's the character's name. She's mm-hmm. a new character.
Mm-hmm.
And we figured, oh, M. Let's just say that her friends call her MJ, just to throw it out there. She could end up being a love interest. Maybe not. But she's not Mary Jane. And going back to what you said about how Mary Jane is perceived. Mary Jane was more of a vixen in the comic. Party girl, a little bit of an attitude, rebellious.
Gwen was a little sweeter?
Gwen was the sweet one, okay. The not so interest. Like, she was just your typical...
But she was a vixen-ish in the blue. In most of the stories, isn't she, like, nice and darling and all of that?
And MJ? MJ?
Yeah.
She seems more...
She's the hot chick. She's the hot girl.
She seems more like the girl who doesn't really care. Like, she's like, come on, guys, let's go party. And then when Gwen dies, Peter's like, what do you even care? You don't care about anybody but yourself anyways. And that's when you see MJ become the fully flushed out character. Like, I do have a heart.
Okay, that's the MJ I know.
Right.
Right? Girl next door.
Yes.
Situation.
Right.
Anyway... Perhaps they're venturing off to a whole new character, and I get that. But like I said, I liked her. I thought she was funny, but she was kind of like antisocial. Like, I'm not going to go up the elevator. Right, I have better things to do. Like, that kind of attitude. Like, it was a little funny. That sarcastic, not nemesis. What's the word?
Antagonist?
What I am. What me.
Cynical?
Yeah. That person. You know what? I like that. But then when the gear shifted on me at the very end, I'm like, huh?
Yeah.
But you could be very well, you're right, if they're just kind of throwing, like they have the Nuggets, like mm-hmm. this, what's her name? You said there's an Asian character?
Cindy
Moon. Mm-hmm. And then there's like the Shocker in mm-hmm. the sky and whatever. Like they're all kind of throwing in these little hints. Mm-hmm. Maybe that was their way of throwing in the MJ hint.
Yeah.
It could very well be. I'm just saying initially, I'm like, yeah. What happened?
Right.
to this person.
Right. Yeah.
So... That was my own.
I have one other complaint. It's a big one. I really, really need Peter to work for the Daily Bugle. He really has to have, like, J. Jonah Jameson
is as essential. Well, I did say that Spider-Man's returning, so maybe when he's a little bit older.
I hope in the next movie that becomes a main thing of... This kid is a menace. He brought down a plane, destroyed Coney Island, and he's all over the paper as, you know, a menace. Or the internet, because the other way you can flip it is that in today's world, newspapers aren't our art form anymore. First thing that we go to, right? Yeah. We go to our tablets or what have you. So if they're like a conglomerate that's like a television, internet type of media thing, that would be cool. But I need to have that relationship between Jonah and Peter. I think it's so important to the character, what he does.
That's probably coming up.
I really hope so, because they didn't do it in Amazing Spider-Man 2 or Amazing Spider-Man. He had the camera.
Mm-hmm.
He did take pictures, but it's so important to his survival that... I got to take pictures while I'm doing this in order to pay for this mm-hmm. for my aunt mm-hmm. or in order to pay for that.
Or just to take the girl out.
Yeah. And that it's Peter's and it was perfectly done in this movie when you realize that the girl he's in love with and taking to homecoming, her father, spoilers.
What a twist.
Is... Adrian Toomes.
And that was a real twist, because when he opened the door, I thought my mind immediately went, oh, he's holding them hostage.
Right. You never even realized, like, wait a second.
No. Nope.
Yeah. He could totally be the father.
He could totally be a family man.
Yeah. And that's when it really hit me, like, oh, crap. This guy is the hero for real of his own story. Like, mm-hmm. he did it to better, because his kid's a good kid mm-hmm. and he's given them a good life.
Mm-hmm.
And his motives are good.
Mm-hmm.
Great twist. That moment, completely, like, at that, when that happened, I'm like, okay, I get it. This is great.
Yeah.
I was, like, hook, line, and sinker, invested, and, like, yes. Totally. Perfect. That's Spider-Man. His villains are always so closely connected. Yes. Yeah. That was... Spot on. That was good.
That was smart.
So
smart move.
I'm gonna end my critique on a very, very highly positive note. So
excellent.
Yeah. What would you rate it?
Okay, I found this to be very entertaining. Mm-hmm. It was an entertaining movie. I thought Tom Holland was a good enough Spider-Man, but I found that I saw him more as a kid than a hero in this movie. And I think also, too, it's because Tony put it in my head. You know what I mean? He's like, you're not ready yet. We'll call you. Our people will get... You know what I mean? And then he's there texting Happy. I'm ready. And I'm waiting outside. And he's calling and his calls are being ignored. So I think it was... Subconsciously, I'm being told he's just a kid.
Right.
What are we doing here? Right. You know?
Yeah.
Yeah. Hey, before I give my rating.
Yeah.
Can I ask a question?
Yes.
I found I found that there was a lot of culture in this movie.
Okay.
Right?
Right.
Did you notice this?
Yeah, yeah, I did.
As a woman of color, I found this to be fantastic. But I don't feel that Marvel Studios did it from a genuine place.
I think you brought this up before in another... Was it in another episode where I think you felt the same way?
I don't remember.
Okay.
But I liked the variety of, like, people and backgrounds and colors. Like, this is real life. We're mm-hmm. rubbing shoulders with...
Especially in New York.
Especially. But I almost felt like it was overly done.
Okay. Is there any particular...
Almost like, you know how Marvel has this thing of, like, sticking it, you know, to like... To the man, like, to DC, where they're like, well, you guys got crap about, full-out destruction.
Mm-hmm.
And we're going to be like, no, no. Let's have Tony Sue tell him, oh, this building is empty. Throw mm-hmm. the Hulk in there.
Right, right.
No casualties.
Right. Right.
That kind of thing. Like, yeah. The total opposite.
Mm-hmm.
So I feel like... I felt like there was a lot happening. There was a lot of integrating of people that I liked, but it was almost being forced. I feel like it was forced. It wasn't coming from a genuine place. They were just throwing a whole lot of people in there just to say, hey, look at us. We're multicultural. It's not whitewash. It's everything all happening at once. Does that make any sense?
I respect what you're saying.
It just don't feel like it was...
Yeah.
Raw. It wasn't just, they still put the Puerto Rican in the bodega. That was okay. Still very, you know.
Yeah.
And, it's just, I don't know.
I get what you mean, and it's not something you want to gripe about, because it's a good thing when you see that happening, especially in a story where there's a lot of room for that to happen. But... It was definitely noticeable.
That's what I mean.
Yes.
Which is great, but at the same time, it's almost like they were doing it to make a point, as opposed to saying this is real life.
Yeah, and I think that's also part of our problem, is that we're not used to seeing that on the screen, that when it does happen, we feel like it's being forced.
Right.
And it shouldn't feel like that.
Yeah, that could be true, yeah.
So...
I didn't think of that.
I think it's part of our subconscious of what we've been fed on television and movies for so long, that when we're like, oh wow, there's this person and that person and that Korean principal and African American gym teacher, like, you just, whoa, everybody is Peter's the only Caucasian person in this the original comic, there was, you know, Glory Grant was, and Joe Robertson were the people of color in those stories. And it was, Stan Lee was a pretty progressive writer for his time to include different races, but it's very American Pie in a lot of ways when you read old comic books.
Right, right.
But in this case, you definitely got to see, like, Flash in this was not some white boy jock in this story that he's always been.
Right, right.
He's a different type of bully.
Mm-hmm.
He's a rich kid from, East Indian background.
Mm-hmm.
But it works.
Mm-hmm.
At first I was kind of like, oh, why did they have to change Flash? Flash needs... I would have hated him more if he was some pretentious white kid. Right? Like the 13 Reasons Why, that kid... That kid.
Yeah.
He fits
Flash. That whole thing.
Exactly. Yeah. He's Flash.
Right.
So I was kind of like, if it was him, I would hate him.
Right.
Automatically. But no, it worked. It worked. But I get what you're saying, but I think that's also something that's internally in us that we got to learn to get over.
Yeah.
And maybe a movie like this does that.
Yeah. So. Which, like I said, I liked it.
Yeah,
it was good. I just wanted it to be natural.
Even the fact that the Vulture when you, like you said, I thought he was holding them hostage. Mm-hmm. And you're like, well, why can't he be married to...
Why can't there be an interracial relationship?
Yeah. Like, why can't that can't that be his daughter?
It's true.
And it makes you realize, like, wow, I'm so programmed to think a certain way that...
Well, it's... When media society has integrated this idea...
Of what you're supposed to see on a screen.
Right, And it's like, who can blame people's, like... Well, I mean, people are terrible, but, like... If that's all you've ever seen, if that's you've ever, you know, no, but it's true. It's true. What are you laughing at?
As a woman of color.
That's what I was told. Look, I'm just saying, but like, it's true. It's been out there for so long. So for some people, for us to see these things transition, it's exciting, but I just hope it's like, you know.
You want it to be off. You want it to feel genuine, authentic. Yeah. I get what you mean.
I don't want it to be like, look at us, we're mixing it up. You know what I mean? Like the way they did with look at us, we're you know, making sure there's no casualties. Those kind of like under.
Yeah.
Those under backhanded
things. Yeah.
I just hope it was done because they're like, you know what? There are more people in the world than just white people.
Absolutely.
So let's mix it up a little
bit. So do you have a final score for this movie? Out of 60.
What? I did think about this long and hard.
I can tell.
I feel like you're going to be disappointed.
No, I won't.
I'm going to give it... I liked it. I want everyone to know that I liked it. I just don't think I liked it as much as everybody else. And I don't want to be pressured into saying something or feeling something that is not really there. So I'm just going to say it. I'm giving this movie, out of 10, a 7.5.
That's a nice score.
Is it?
Sure.
I don't know. It seems kind of low to me.
No.
Because of the high expectation of this is the best Marvel movie ever. And everyone's like, I want to see it again. And oh, it's so great.
I think it's a really fair score. I was going to give it a 7.5.
What?
Out of 7.58. Yeah.
You seem more like an 8 kind of guy.
I'm going to give it an 8. I don't think it was the best Marvel movie they'd ever made.
Was there even a plot in this movie?
Yes, there was.
Okay, tell me. Because what was it?
It was the plot of a, like you said before, a kid coming of age, discovering who he is and what it is that he wants to do, the reasons why.
Okay.
And it was also the plot of the Vulture's journey, or Adrian Toomes' journey, of him thinking he's the hero of his own story and trying to do the right thing for his people.
Gotcha. Okay.
And what is interesting is, spoilers, at in the last credits, the bonus scene that they have, the, what do they call it?
End credit
scene, right? He doesn't give up.
Yes!
Peter's identity.
That's right! Which, again, things that I like about the movie, things that I don't. I like that it's to himself. No, sorry. I don't like that his identity is out there.
Yeah.
I don't like it.
Me neither.
I do not like it.
Me neither.
But I'm happy that this guy is like taking that oath of like, shut it.
Yeah. Don't say it. Because he saved his life and his family's life, right? He feels like he owes the kid something.
Wait a minute. Whoa. You lost me here. What are you talking about?
He saved his daughter's life, right?
From the elevator.
Okay.
Yeah.
And
he thanked him for that already. Like, you messed with me.
But he also didn't hurt him. It almost seemed like it was out of a respect for Peter. Either that he wants to take him out himself, or he doesn't want other people to go after him, to hurt him.
I think you're reaching.
Okay. Fair enough.
You could be right. I just think you're reaching.
Okay. Maybe I am. Trying to find the good in Adrian.
Because I would be... If he was already ticked off with the fact that Peter was kind of interfering with his operation. Now he fully took him out. And he got his family... Like, now he's separated from his family. Like, his whole world's falling apart because of this kid. I'd have a vendetta. I'd want to take him out. I wouldn't do anything to protect him. That would be me, but I'm vengeful that way.
But he also knows that Peter and his daughter have an attachment to each other. So if they knew that Peter was connected to his family, they could try to hurt his family. Reaching, but we'll see. Hopefully, for me, I would love them to make a Spider-Man movie every year. I would love to just revisit that world.
But that's what you got the comic books for.
Yeah. Well, look at that shelf of Spider-Man. So, all right. The review is in. DavJ gives it a respectable 7.5. I give it a respectable 8. It was great fun. I want to watch it again. I may go by myself. Don't know when. But I did enjoy it that I want to see it again in the theater. Any last words for your fans, DavJ?
I feel like I'm on the spot a little bit.
They're patiently waiting.
You think about it.
If you want to hit us up, send us an email at caveofsolitude@outlook.com. Rate and review our show on iTunes. It helps to get the show out there. We really appreciate all the love and support and even some of the criticism. We're up for that as well. We hope you enjoyed the show. And DavJ, are you ready? Got something to say to your peeps?
Look both sides before you cross the street, kids. Be safe out there.
And no one's half the battle.
Yeah.
Now you know. Yeah. Thanks, everybody, for listening. I'm Eric Anthony.
Lady J here.
Take care, everyone.
Ciao. Wherever there's a hang, you find a Spider-Man.